Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP, professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app. Good evening, everyone. Today is January 7th, 2026. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 48,996, the NASDAQ at 23,584, and the S&P at 6,920. Our topic tonight is financial planning tips learned from 2025. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Cindy and Bob are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and they'll bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. If you have a question that, you know, it might be a little longer, a little bit more personal, you're welcome to send questions through that website as well, yourfinancialchoices.com. And I don't hound you or, you know, try to get your information or anything. I just answer the questions, all right, in case people are afraid of that. I also love show ideas and would love to know what people would like to hear about, you know, for their financial life. So again, tonight, financial planning tips learned from 2025. You know, it's just kind of a general topic name, folks. I could talk about anything. I will mention again, though, how much I love questions. Because from my perspective, when listeners call in, those could be questions that other listeners may have as well. And some of you may be too shy to call in and others are braver, but we all learn more when we ask questions. So where I thought of this was, for me, you know, this is my business. This is, you know, financial planning. You know, I'm a CPA. I'm a certified financial planner. Our firm does wealth management. And there are all of these elements of your financial life that I talk about frequently with clients. And that is your cash flow, your taxes, your retirement accounts, your investment management, your risk management, and your estate planning. All of these areas of your financial life that you kind of want to keep your thumb on the pulse of to make the best decisions you can. Because as I say at the end of every radio show, be proactive, not reactive, which means when we're in front of our decisions, we have more options than if we're on the other side of them. This is probably something I talk about almost every day when I'm talking with clients. Just as an example, a young lady, we had a call with one of our younger clients today. She's a daughter of another client. Her parents are clients, and so responsible. I was so proud of her. She recently married, had bought a house, was thinking about doing a renovation, and, you know, wanted to call and see what made sense. Does it make sense, number one, to do this renovation? Does it make sense? How do I pay for this renovation? What do my finances look like? Just such good questions. And I'm so proud of her. And she's young and she's doing that. And I have clients who are in their 60s who may not be as diligent about being in front of their decisions. You know, that's probably why they hire us, to help keep that discipline and keep, you know, ahead of those decisions. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But it can make such a difference in the options that are available to you and being aware of them. And what I've realized when I look back at 2025 is the changes are coming faster and faster. So we talk about AI making such differences in our lives and, you know, even from an investment standpoint, is it going to be a bubble? But it's not even just that. It's how we're working. It's how we're researching. It's how we're, you know, finding out information. And things move so rapidly that it's even hard for professionals to be in front of all of the changes. So that's what made me think about this, because we had new administration come in 2026. We had new tax law changes. And the tax law changes, it almost felt like a whiplash to me as a planner and someone who's been in this business for a very long time. Back in the day, my feeling, my recollection was when there were tax changes, if there had been tax laws already in place, they were kind of grandfathered. This is what we typically, you know, use that. Oh, are we grandfathered? Yeah, typically, you know, tax law was grandfathered for whatever period of time. And new tax law usually took place at the start of the next tax year, not mid-year. And in recent years, it's not just this administration, but in recent years, it feels like legislation is getting passed mid-year for whatever reason to, you know, spur the economy, help the economy, like when we were going through COVID, you know, different, legislation was being passed to kind of help everybody. Well, now it seems to be just happening more often, and it's really hard to plan for that. So I thought to myself, well, you know, how do we plan? What did we learn from that? And I'm just going to kind of try to cover some of these topics. And one of the big ones I'm just going to get off, you know, right off the front here, because it doesn't apply to that many people. But I want to mention something called the estate tax exemption, the estate tax. The estate tax it only applies to so few people, but I want to caution people, because what I keep hearing are terms like permanent. They made it permanent. They made this tax legislation permanent. I just want to remind everybody that nothing is permanent. Death is permanent. Nothing is permanent when it comes to taxes. So the tax legislation can be changed at any time. But what can we do? We can plan with the information that we have available to us at the time, and that's the best we can do. And I'll give you another quick example. So when I first started, you know, in financial planning, estate planning 30 some years ago, the federal exemption, whether someone had to file and pay taxes on the assets that they owned when they died, that's called a federal estate tax. The exemption for that, meaning if you had to file or not, was $600,000. So if your assets were less than $600,000, you didn't have to file a federal estate tax return. If they were more than that, then you would have to file the federal estate tax return. And that was per person. So you might have, you know, a husband and wife who would each get that. So you could see how the estate planning for that would be very complicated, because it would be very easy to get to $600,000. Now, again, that was many, many years ago. We have time value of money, et cetera, et cetera. But more people might have had exposure to the federal estate tax, and the planning that was done to mitigate the impact of federal estate taxes was quite different, you know, 30 years ago than it is today. So I'm going to give some further caution when we come back from the first break about what's permanent, what's not permanent, and how we have to be nimble in our planning for, you know, changes that we face. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Bob and Cindy are on standby, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy, and she'll write it down. Again, 610-758-8810, and I love questions. So as an example of our topic tonight, financial planning tips learned from 2025. I'm giving the example just at the top of the show because it's kind of an extreme example of how things can change for estate tax, estate planning. And as I mentioned, about 30 years ago, the federal exemption was like $600,000, meaning if my assets were above that amount, I might have to file a federal estate tax return. If you were married and you had a spouse, there was something called the unlimited marital deduction. So if everything was going to your spouse and you died and everything's going to your spouse, you could have, $3 million and it wouldn't be subject to tax at that first to die if everything was going to that spouse. It was called an unlimited marital deduction. But in that case, for example, back then, if the exemption was $600,000 and my spouse died and I have that marital deduction, that federal exemption died with that first spouse. It was gone. If that spouse didn't have assets in their own name and it was like covered using the federal exemption, they just lost that exemption. So people, attorneys set up documents to take advantage and secure that exemption for $600,000. And it was called a credit shelter trust or a residuary trust. So AB trust, all kinds of different language. But basically what they said, if a wife dies first and she has $600,000 of assets, we're going to put that in a trust to use her exemption so it's not lost. And typically what would happen then is the income would go to the surviving spouse during their lifetime, and the residue goes to, whomever. But it would use up that exemption. All kinds of different plannings, too complicated to talk about it here. But fast forward, what is our federal exemption now? It's like $15.1 million in 2026. $15.1 million. It is really, really expanded. And now there's also something called the portability election. So we no longer have to get so fancy with the setting up trust to secure the exemption for the first spouse to die, because we can file a federal estate tax return even when it's not required. Because if my estate's less than $15 million, I have no requirement to file a federal estate tax return. But we still might, to secure the $15 million exemption, because now I don't have to do it in a trust. I don't have to do it in a residuary trust, this, AB trust situation. I can do it just by filing this portability election. So there again, tax laws change over time. And if you're not aware of it, you don't know how to plan. So I feel like we have to be more diligent about what is impacting us and what is not. You may have advisors who don't know about all these little nuances, or they may think you know about them. And if you didn't ask about it, you don't get any answers. So for example, we have clients who may have an estate of, $1 million. Spouse passes away. There's no federal estate exemption. There's no federal estate tax return required to be filed. and you say, well, their estate's only $1 million, and, you know, surviving spouse gets that, and their estate's only worth $1.5 million, and Lori said the exemption's $15 million, $15.1 million. I don't really need to do that federal estate tax return. No, you don't. But what happens if in future legislation they revert the federal estate exemption? I'm not saying they will. I'm not saying they would go from $15 million back to $600,000 or $15 million back to $1 million, but we never know. We never know what's going to happen. So if you're not aware of these little nuances of tax law changes over the, you know, and the portability election's been around for several years now, you have 5 years to file for that. So if anyone's listening and had a spouse pass away and maybe your assets are worth, you know, $2 million, $3 million, $5 million, you might want to say, hey, should I have filed the federal 706 to elect portability, even though I otherwise was not required to file it? When you file for that portability, you have then secured that federal exemption that was available to that spouse who passed away. So, oh gosh, what was it last year? I don't know. 1 year, it was like $13.96 million. So you could secure that from like a year ago or a couple of years ago for the surviving spouse. Why might that make a difference? Number one, your spouse could have passed away young, and you might have another 20 or 30 years to live. And what might happen to your portfolio? We have seen portfolios double in, you know, 7, 8, 10 years. So if the portfolios are doubling at that clip and you could live another 20 years, what if they don't further increase the federal exemption? So you never know when it may or may not apply to you or lower the federal exemption. So you just have to kind of be hyper aware of that. All right. So that was an example, a very complicated example, but to demonstrate to you how tax planning may change and how estate planning may change, and you just kind of have to be diligent. So back to, for example, that $600,000 I said, where there was a trust maybe set up with $600,000, and that was, you know, 30 years ago, and now that $600,000 is worth $2 million. Well, the cost basis, you know, stays the same based on the date-of-death value of that first spouse. There's not a step-up in basis on this residuary trust because it's not included in the survivor's estate. So, gosh, you say, shoot, now I'm not going to get a step up in basis. If I owned those assets from 30 years ago, I would get a step up in basis on those assets if I die. Step up in basis in assets that you own, you know, individually. So it raises a lot of questions and a lot of requiring a lot of review of the situation. All right. That also goes to address people who have old estate documents. I just attended, I have to do continuing education all the time, and I just attended a webinar about estate planning, not being just about trust. It includes, you know, all kinds of other things, obviously. But he had, the presenter had said that only 30% of the people in the country have wills. Now, I thought it was more around like half. And his goal was to get every client he had to get their estate planning done. And I will reiterate that because, for example, I mentioned those bypass trusts, the residuary trust, the AB trust. That's all old language based on old tax law that really should be updated. So if you had an attorney that was smart enough to do those kinds of documents for you back in the day, and you haven't gone back to that attorney or their firm or a new attorney to get those documents updated, you might be locking in tax elections that you really would not have intended to do under the current tax legislation. So you really, really, really need to review old tax old estate documents if you have not done that in recent years. Statutes change. Pennsylvania statutes have changed. Powers of attorney statutes have changed. So attorneys are very aware of those changes. Now, so many people are also going online, and again, with AI and services out there to write wills and powers of attorney and healthcare, those may or may not apply and do a service for your particular situation. That is a computer. It may not know all the nuances of your personal life. Whereas if you're having a one-on-one conversation with an attorney, they could alert you to things that you have to navigate a little bit more carefully than what a box program or, you know, an online software might give you, because sometimes those online softwares aren't particular to the state where you live, and there could be nuances that it doesn't pick up or catch. All right, so please be aware of that. When we come back, I'm going to talk about some other financial planning tips learned from 2025, particularly around taxes and investments. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA. Well, I guess I've already said this. I think I'm at the start of the show. We are talking about financial planning tips learned from 2025. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy. Let me just quickly touch on investments a little bit. I generally steer away from investments because I'm licensed and I can't really talk about it and don't want to give any recommendations. But what I am going to say is, what did we learn from 2025? If you recall, back in April, there was an announcement of tariffs and the market reacted quite significantly. There was a huge pullback in the market. And, you know, people were calling and saying, oh my gosh, you know, should I get out? You know, what is this going to do? And, you know, we have to kind of temper people's concerns, because historically what happens is we get past these events very quickly. And sure enough, that is what happened. The market, you know, came back. And if someone had pulled out on those days, they would not have maybe perhaps timed the recovery as quickly. So if they got out when the market's down and then waited until they felt better about things and the market was back up, they would have been selling low and buying high. And that's usually what we try to avoid. So what, to me, what we've learned, a financial planning tip from 2025, is to stay disciplined in your investment approach and to diversify. Diversification is very, very important. There's a chart that we look at that shows the different rates of returns for different asset classes. And looking at that, I'm just going to kind of try to give you like a view of why diversification matters and why timing the market does not usually work. It's time, as we say, timing the market, not timing the market. When we look at asset class performance, I'm just going to give you a quick, you know, this is based on Clearnomics, and it was printed January 5th of 2026, and it talks about asset class performance, total returns, and annual averages over the period shown. So I am looking at a chart that shows for 2022, for example, commodities had the best rate of return at 16.1. And in 2023, so you could be chasing that, right? In 2023, it had the worst returns, negative 7.9. In 2022, small caps returns were negative 20.4. In 2023, they were 16.9. In 2023, they were 16.9. In 2024, they were 11.5. In 2025, they were 12.8. So it kind of goes up, it kind of goes down. And then I said, as the commodities, it was the top performer. Then in 23, the lowest performer. And then in 24, a little closer to the middle at 5.4, and in 2025 also in the middle at about 15.8. The S&P returns in 2022 down 18.1. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fifth from the top of performance, because every area kind of did poorly in 2022, except, as I said, commodities. So in 2022, the S&P was down 18.1. In 23, it was up 26.3. And in 24, it was up 25. Emerging markets in 22, down 19.7. In 23, up 10.3. In 2024, up 8.1. But in 23, it was the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th best performer. And in 24, it was the 24th best, or the 4th best performer. And guess what? In 25, emerging markets, 34.4%. All over the map. Up and down, up and down, up and down. Which is why you don't stick with one kind of asset class. You diversify your investment strategies, your investment options, to mitigate the ups and downs and the volatility. It kind of smooths it out. When we talk about standard deviation, it's how far off is something from, you know, a standard amount, basically. And diversifying smooths that out. So what did we learn from 2025? Diversification is very important. We can't time always which is going to be performing when, or when you're going to hit it. So kind of sticking to a disciplined approach. Now, sometimes people like to chase certain returns. And, you know, maybe you have a little bit of play money, and maybe that's what you want to do. But really, from most professionals' perspective, we want to make sure that you have your emergency reserves, so that if there is a dip in the market, as we saw in April, if you're needing money and you have to pull money, we're not having to pull money out when the market's down, because you've had your emergency reserve set aside. What are emergency reserves set aside for? For emergencies, for when you have an unexpected expense that you don't want to have to be hit in your investment account by, you know, volatility. So emergency reserves. The other thing we talk to clients about is, you know, this what we call the bucket strategy. What are your next X number of years expectations for cash needs? So if someone's working full time, maybe you have both spouses working full time, and, you know, you have good cash flow, your cash needs and short-term buckets may not have to be as big as someone who is now retired. Once you're retired and you no longer have a paycheck coming in, then we have to make sure that we have money available to you in the event there's a downturn in the market. Now, you heard me mention how quickly the market recovered from that tariff dip. You know, historically, when we look at some of these recoveries, I mean, there's recoveries, like it's like 10 days, 2 weeks. From what we would think in the moment could be tragic news, and they seem to recover. So we really have to be careful about reacting, and we also have to be careful to make sure that you have the funds you need for the period of time that we need in the event that it's a longer term turnaround, which I think probably the longest turnaround from a bear market might be like 2 years. Don't quote me on the statistics. But, you know, so we like to make sure that clients have emergency reserves and a kind of what we call a five-year bucket, and then even an intermediate term bucket. And then the longer term bucket is what's working for you and going to hopefully take care of your longer term needs. All right. So emergency reserves, diversification, sticking to a discipline, timing the market, not timing the market. And also, you know, when there are funds available, there may be investment opportunities for you. So you want to be aware and ready for that as well. If we see that there is a dip and you have funds, you could, you know, buy on the dip as well. But today's dip is going to be today's dip was yesterday's high, and tomorrow's high could be the future's low. So it's just all crazy. Okay, so diversification, staying the course, being flexible and nimble, and build in options. And be aware of you know, the geography of your assets and your investments as well. We want Roth IRAs typically to grow because they're growing tax-free, and IRAs are ordinary income no matter how we have it invested. And then your individual accounts, your brokerage accounts that have dividends, if they're qualified dividends, they qualify for a lower tax rate. So be aware of that and watch for that. We saw this year in 2025 a lot of capital gain distributions for people who have mutual funds, and those capital gain distributions have lower tax impacts but could also hit you when you didn't realize. So you want to think about what kind of investments do you have, mutual funds, ETFs, individual stocks, and how is that income getting reported to you? Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. We are talking about some financial planning tips learned from 2025. And, the biggest and foremost for me is the tax changes that happened in 2025. It's like, oh, shoot, there's certain clients that I would might have said, gosh, I wish I would have known about this at the beginning of the year. And then other clients, it's like, okay, good. We didn't do anything and we can now plan for something at the end of the year that or change our path from what we thought we were going to do at the beginning of the year. And what do I mean by that really quickly, just kind of in a nutshell, and then I'll kind of hit some of the big, points from the tax legislation that went through. So, for example, every year for clients, particularly clients who are in the retirement phase, I'm always looking for opportunities to do conversions from IRA to Roth. And those conversions might be $60,000. They might be $10,000. Typically, what I were trying to do is play tax brackets and play what I call the Medicare IRMA brackets if someone is 65 or older. So, we might be doing those conversions. Typically, we do wait till the end of the year. I say for 2025 that we may have waited to do those to the end of the year, because what happened in the One Big Beautiful Bill is they gave an extra deduction for seniors 65 or older if you're a certain age. Now, here's where I get, I feel for people who just read the headlines and don't read the details. And that I've had people say, oh, well, my Social Security is not taxable anymore. Well, that's not the case. What happened was it was proposed that they wouldn't tax Social Security anymore, but that could not go through tax legislation and would not have gotten passed. So what they allowed was what's called an enhanced senior deduction for people 65 and older of $6,000 each if you're within certain income limits. So that impacts whether I do a conversion or not, because if I'm putting more money on the tax return to play the 12% bracket or the 22% bracket, if I'm putting more money on the tax return, that may limit this extra senior deduction they get. So that's what I'm talking about, some of the tax legislation that may have changed. In addition, there were people who may have thought, energy credits, by the way, whether it was permanent or not, a permanent extension of certain energy credits that was done, several years ago. They extended certain energy credits through, 2030 or 2032. So again, we think, oh, that's going to be good for 2030, 2032. No, they just got rid of a lot of these energy credits. So if we had known that they were going to take away the energy credits, we might have talked to clients about, hey, if you're thinking about those new windows or solar panels or geothermal, equipment in the home, which some of those solar panels or solar credits are huge credits, we might have, accelerated the implementation or installation of those types of improvements to the home to get these energy credits that were available. But thinking they were available for several years, we find out No. If some of these things were not done by December 31st, you don't get the credit. All right. So then when this happens, and now people who were thinking about doing some of these improvements are scrambling to try to get them done before year end. And now we're like in July and August, and these vendors or providers are overwhelmed by the demand, people trying to get them done sooner. And guess what? They're told they may not be able to get it done by December 31st, you know, which then means they lose the availability of those energy credits because now they have expired as of 1/1/2026. All right. So the moral of the story is you kind of can't take your thumb off the pulse of, you know, financial changes, whether they're happening in the market or with taxes or investments or, you know, estate planning, whatever it might be. You kind of have to be diligent to take advantage of whatever might be available to you at that time. So let me talk a little bit. I could talk about the senior credit in a little bit more, but I wanted to mention that some of the other tax planning was no tax on tips. So they talked about no tax on tips, and that sounds like, oh, wow, no tax on tips. You know, maybe it's I don't do those tax returns for people with tips. I don't know. But I keep thinking, are people really reporting the tips? But so it sounds like it could be a great, you know, deduction, but I don't know how much people are. I mean, you're supposed to report no matter what. I mean, I report, you know, $12 of jury duty pay, but, you know, the no tax on tips. Let me explain how that works a little bit. It is a new deduction. It's effective for 2025 through 2028. So here again, it's not for, you know, ever. 25, 26, 27, 28, 4 years, employees and self-employed individuals may deduct qualified tips received in occupations that are listed by the IRS as customarily and regularly receiving tips on or before December 31st, 24. So if you were in that kind of a job before 2024, meaning the IRS wasn't going to let companies come up with, you know, new positions to pay tips to people to avoid tax. You know, people could get very, very clever. So they were saying it had to have been an occupation that was already customarily and regularly receiving tips. And they're reported on a W-2 or a 1099. Qualified tips are voluntary cash or charge tips received from customers or through tip sharing. The maximum annual deduction is $25,000. For self-employed, deduction may not exceed the individual's net income without regard to this deduction from the trade or business in which the tips were earned. And deductions phase out for taxpayers with modified adjusted gross income over $150,000 or $300,000 for joint filers. Quite often, people with that high of income, I'm not seeing them work for tips necessarily. And then there's some other, you know, complicated, you know, restrictions. It's if you're self-employed in a specified service trade or business, then it doesn't count. Employees whose employer is a specified service trade or business also are not eligible. So even if you are getting tips, you need to make sure, you know, does the business qualify you for, you know, this exception? The taxpayers must include their Social Security number and file jointly if they're married to claim the deduction. Employers and other players have to file certain information, but they are giving a little bit of a reprieve for 2025. So I am not exactly sure how that information is captured, but generally the tip income, you're still paying Social Security and Medicare tax on it. You're just avoiding the federal tax, not necessarily the state tax either. Okay, so may not be, oh, the other thing I had read, and I think I might have mentioned this on a prior show, that if you're receiving tips that were part of like a group tip, so that the employer or restaurant or whatever it might be automatically charges, let's say 18%, like on a group of six or more, those tips don't count. So I don't know how they're tracking this, but it may not be as much as you think, but you know, hopefully some people will benefit from this. No tax on overtime. This is one that I also think, you know, again, general statement, no tax on overtime. If I didn't read, I might think, oh, well, you know, if my overtime was $1,000 because I worked an extra, you know, 5 hours and I got $1,000, that sounds like a pretty good deal, that's not subject to tax. Well, it's not exactly that. Again, effective for 25 through 28, and this is all from the IRS, by the way. Individuals who receive qualified overtime compensation may deduct the pay that exceeds their regular rate of pay, such as the half portion of time and a half. So if my overtime was $1,000, what would that have been? Like 700 or something, 350. Yeah. So if I normally would make about 700 and I got paid 1,000, it would be $300 that would be excluded for federal taxes only on the overtime. So it's not as big as one might have initially thought. The maximum annual deduction is $12,500 or $25,000 for joint filers. And the deduction phases out for taxpayers with, again, modified adjusted gross income of $150,000. Was that the same for the tip? I don't remember here. Yeah, $150,000 for single and $300,000 for joint filers. And if you're a joint filer, you have to file joint if you're married, I mean, to claim the deduction. And again, employers are required to file the information with the IRS, but they are giving them some transition relief for 2025 for taxpayers claiming the deduction. I know we tried to get this information for planning for one of our clients, and we said, you know, well, what is your overtime? And he couldn't retrieve it. And he had left the employer mid-year. He had retired, and he couldn't seem to retrieve it. And other people have said to me, oh, of course, employers track that. Of course they do. Well, I said, what if the pay changes? What if there's, you know, a change in pay? Maybe the first half of the year you're making X amount of dollars, and at the end of the year you got a raise and you're making a little bit more. Are they tracking what the overtime would be based on the time periods or kind of overall for the year? I don't know how they do it, but hopefully it'll all make sense when we go to file tax returns and we'll be able to see it. Another no tax on car loan interest. So again, let's read into this a little bit. So the new deduction for 25 through 28, individuals may deduct interest paid on a loan used to purchase a qualified vehicle, provided the vehicle is purchased for personal use and meets other eligibility criteria. Lease payments do not qualify. The maximum annual deduction is $10,000. To qualify for the deduction, the interest must be paid on a loan that's originated after December 31st, 24, and used to purchase a vehicle, the original use of which starts with the taxpayer. Used vehicles do not qualify. For a personal use vehicle, not for professional or business or commercial or business, and it has to be secured by a lien on the vehicle. So let's talk about that $10,000, no tax on car loan interest. The average interest rate on a car loan of 5 years is 7%. To get a $10,000 deduction, that car would have had to been financed for $142,857. I'm thinking, okay, so I could deduct. So again, it sounds like, oh, this is nice. A little deduction extra we get. $142,857 is 7% of that interest would be $10,000. That's the deduction. But there's a phase out on that too. The deduction phases out for taxpayers with modified adjusted gross income over $100,000 for single, $200,000 for joint filers. So it's a little bit of a lower threshold for married filing joint. So let's get real here. So I said, what about a $40,000 car loan? 5 years at 7%, that would be a $2,800 deduction. It's still a deduction. I mean, if you have to buy a car and if you have to finance it, and the best financing terms you can get is, you know, with the, you know, secured by the vehicle, then of course you're going to take advantage of that deduction if you're eligible to it based on your income as well. And, you know, a $40,000 car isn't a cheap car either. I can't tell you the last time I bought a new car, so I wouldn't ever qualify for it. Folks, we are at the last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
Don't
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about financial planning tips learned from 2025. Basically, you know, just be ever alert all the time. Stress yourself out. Thinking about all the things that you have to be aware of and keep track of. It's even hard for professionals. I did have a comment come through. Does the car need to be manufactured in the USA for the deduction? Absolutely. So let's go over the qualified vehicle requirements. A qualified vehicle is a car, minivan, van, SUV, pickup truck, or motorcycle with a gross vehicle weight rating of less than 14,000 pounds. And that has undergone final assembly in the United States. And what does that mean, final assembly in the United States? The location of final assembly will be listed on the vehicle information label attached to each vehicle on a dealer's premises. So I guess what's manufactured versus final assembly. Alternatively, taxpayers may rely on the vehicle's plant of manufacture as reported in the VIN to determine whether a vehicle has undergone final assembly in the United States. And there's a website for a VIN decoder for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration that provides that plant of manufacture information, and taxpayers can follow the instructions on that website to determine if the vehicle's plant of manufacture was located in the United States. You know, typically, I would expect your car dealership, if you're buying a brand new car and they're aware of this deduction, they should be talking to you about all of it. It's available. You must include the VIN number of the qualified vehicle on the tax return for any year in which the deduction is claimed. Lenders or other recipients of qualified interest must file information returns with the IRS and furnish statements to taxpayers showing the total amount of interest received during the taxable year. And of course, the IRS is going to provide transition relief for tax year 2025 for interest recipients subject to the new reporting requirements. So just like if you have a mortgage for your house, the bank or the lender sends you a 1098 reporting the interest expense that you paid for that mortgage, we should expect to see something similar for the car loan interest. All right. Let me go back to the deduction for seniors now. So I kind of teased that where I said this new senior deduction, they couldn't, you know, get through making Social Security tax free. And I will remind listeners that, you know, there's a great majority of seniors who receive Social Security who do not pay any tax on Social Security because it's included in your taxable income based on your other income on your return. And it may not put you in a taxable income position. All right. So many people already have tax-free Social Security. But for those who are in higher income limits where the Social Security is included in taxable income, this senior deduction may help offset a little bit of that. It's only $6,000 per taxpayer, and it's only within certain income limits. So effective for 25 through 28, individuals who are 65 and older may claim an additional deduction of $6,000. This new deduction is in addition to the current additional standard deduction for seniors under existing law. The senior deduction is per eligible individual, so that would be $12,000 for married couples where both spouses qualify. Sometimes we still have one that might be 64 and the other one 65, so you have to be aware of, you know, make sure you're entering your birth dates right. Deduction phases out for taxpayers with modified adjusted gross income over $75,000 for single and $150,000 for joint. All right. So this is part of the planning where we have to kind of manage, do we want that deduction? Because if we go over 150, there is a phase out for joint filers, and it's quite the big range. But the more income I put on the return, the less that deduction is. So, for example, if I'm in a 12% bracket or I'm in a 22% tax bracket, if I don't do this exactly right and I lose that deduction, I could be costing that taxpayer more than the marginal tax rate they're in, if that makes sense. To qualify for the additional deduction, a taxpayer must attain age 65 on or before the last day of the taxable year, and the deductions available for people who itemize or don't itemize, and you have to include your Social Security number and file jointly if you're married to get it. So back when I was talking about planning and being aware and kind of being, I wanted to say being nimble and in front of your options, and I talked about doing conversions of IRA money, this might be one of those reasons. And what we've learned from 2025 is people who might think they're eligible to do a conversion of IRA money to Roth because they've done it every year and their income's similar every year, and we do a conversion every year of $10,000, let's get it done early in the year. Oh, if we had, we might have lost some of the credit that would have been available to us in these circumstances. So that's why I was working till midnight in December every night, because year-end tax planning is almost like an extra tax season where we're trying to make sure any of the planning that was done earlier in the year, that it still looks like what we thought. It could change perhaps someone who was doing estimated tax payments quarterlies because they thought they were going to owe money. If now they have this extra deduction, maybe they could trim back their fourth quarter payment or not do their fourth quarter payment. Sometimes what that extra deduction will get you might be, if you're in a 12% tax bracket, more of your income at zero tax. So we saw some of those, what we call circular calculations, where when we have this $12,000 credit available, so we're not doing conversions, and now maybe we have more qualified dividends and or long-term capital gains in the 12% tax bracket, which would yield zero tax. So if I take that situation, what it looks like today, with not doing a conversion with this extra $12,000 and maybe someone's in the 12% bracket, and then I put $10,000 on their tax return, all of a sudden there might be $18,500 on their tax return, because when I put $10,000 on, more of their Social Security gets taxed. Now their income might go up that I'm not getting that full deduction, and now I might be in the next tax bracket and not get the zero tax rate on the qualified dividends and the capital gains. All right. So just kind of be mindful of, you know, how things can change and how you need to kind of do your planning ahead of time to watch out for tax changes. All right. So there was also some change to health savings accounts. And I got to tell you, this kind of hit me that I didn't realize what this really was saying. I'm not sure I've fully explored it, but I kind of want to throw it out there. It might be something I'll have to talk about on a future show. And that is a change to health savings account eligibility. So under the One Big Beautiful Bill, there was an expansion of HSA eligibility. And for someone who doesn't know what HSA is, it's a health savings account. So you're familiar when I've talked about all the time, Roth IRAs, how you can put money into a Roth IRA if you're eligible, or convert IRA money to a Roth. And the reason we like Roths is because they grow income tax free. Well, a health savings account, when you're working, if you have a high deductible health plan that meets certain qualifications, you could be eligible to put money into a medical account called a health savings account. You don't pay tax on that if you're doing it through payroll deduction. You don't pay federal tax, Social Security tax, Medicare tax, state tax, local tax. I mean, it's like, wow. It's really like, wow. It's a big deal, health savings account. Again, it's a high deductible health plan, though. So you have to make sure that whatever that health plan is that you have, that you have funds set aside in the event you do have a medical need, that you have the money, because it's a high deductible health plan. So the premiums on those typically are lower. But then if you had like a medical emergency or surgery, you're going to have to pay a little bit more in deductible than you would for an ordinary plan. Typically, you know, young people, this could work very well for them because they usually don't have medical emergencies or surgeries and whatnot. So they could be a really good candidate for a high deductible health plan, which lowers their medical premiums. And then they could put money into the health savings account. My son has one. He loads it up. Quite often employers put money in or do a match. And then you can have some of that invested if you'd like. So you can invest the health savings account. It also grows income tax free. And if it's only used for qualified health expenses going forward, you can take distributions from it, again, income tax free. So health savings accounts are really great if it fits your circumstances. Well, they're expanding that. And it says bronze and catastrophic plans treated as health high deductible health plans now. So as of January 1, 26, bronze and catastrophic plans available through an exchange, meaning like the marketplace, are considered HSA compatible, regardless of whether the plans satisfy the general definition of a high deductible health plan. This expands the ability of people enrolled in these plans to contribute to HSAs, which they generally have not been able to do in the past. Notice 2026-05-05 clarifies that bronze and catastrophic plans do not have to be purchased through an exchange to qualify for the new relief. So there could be plans that are available to you privately or through the exchange that would be considered a bronze or catastrophic plan. Those usually have lower premiums as well, that could make you eligible for the health savings account. Now, if you're not doing it through an employer, you would have to go set up a health savings account separately, and then you fund it. And when you fund it that way, if it's not through the employer, through payroll deduction, you're only getting the deduction on your federal return, and it can be a deduction on your, if you're a resident of Pennsylvania, on your Pennsylvania return as well. But you're still not getting the full benefit that you would if you were doing it through an employer. Because as I said, if you do it through the employer, you avoid the Medicare and Social Security tax as well. So that is really, you know, that could be a big change. Now, frankly, people who are buying a bronze plan or a catastrophic plan, they may not have extra money to put into a health savings account. So I don't know how much we will see it. I don't know how applicable it would be. But, you know, you could be someone who's just kind of starting off, young, new job, can't afford a lot. So you go with a lower cost plan, a bronze plan, may not be a high deductible, but you may be eligible for that. Other planning tips that we learned from 2025, just, you know, I go back to where I started, estate planning. You really want to make sure that you're coordinating beneficiary designations, asset titling, your will. I can't tell you how many times I've looked this past year in 2025, lots and lots of estate planning in 2025, how often people don't understand how their assets pass and how what they might have in the will isn't how it's turning out when they look at their beneficiary designations. So working with a lot of clients in 2025 on asset titling, transfer on death designations, beneficiary designations, you know, working with the lawyer to make sure that the will aligns with the intent. And sometimes I think it really, really helps to look at the numbers and how the numbers come out, because that's where it's kind of revealed what the expectation is. Because even different beneficiaries, different classes of beneficiaries, for example, in Pennsylvania, we have an inheritance tax. And the inheritance tax is different depending on who's inheriting. So you might have one person who might be at a 15% inheritance tax, and all your other residuary beneficiaries might be bearing the tax, you know, from the residuary estate for that. So just kind of, you know, really make 2026 the year of engagement with your own financial planning, with your own financial choices, and make it a year of action to at least get your estate planning done and make sure that you're plugged in to other tax planning opportunities that might be available under new tax legislation, and staying the course on investments, et cetera, making sure you understand that. Next week, folks, unfortunately, I think I'm going to be out, so I have to have another pre-recorded show. But we'll be back the following week with Bill Henderson and Chris Holland to talk about the markets in 2 weeks. So I want to thank Bridger, thank Cindy and Bob for being here. Thank you, listeners. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.